Hey, welcome to Braves Country.
Coming up on this episode of Braves Country, the unmistakable voice of Josh Turner, and we welcome his son Marion too. We'll talk about their love for the Braves, playing baseball themselves, and the time that Josh Turner decided to drive to Johnny Cash's house. It's all coming up next on Braves Country. This episode of Braves Country is sponsored by our Braves fan friends down at Century 21, Solomon Properties in Savannah, Georgia, servicing the historic downtown Savannah area, the island area, and Atlanta's beach, beautiful Tybee Island, Georgia. Call Joel Solomon today, 912-604-0896. That's 912-604-0896 for all your real estate needs on the Georgia coast.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey sandwich lovers, today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open! Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.
For nearly two decades, Josh Turner's been one of country music's most recognizable voices. He's sold 8.5 million records, and now he's written and released a Christmas album that's an instant classic. His new album is called King Size Manger. It's his first Christmas album. It came out back in October. He sings classic festive songs and four originals, which were either written or co-written by Josh. He and his wife Jennifer and their four children appear on Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas on the album, and we are certainly proud to welcome Josh and Marion Turner to the Braves Country Podcast. What's up, Marion? How are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so good, man, and it's such a pleasure to have you and your dad here, man. You know what? We can talk to him about that, all that other stuff later. We need to talk about the stuff that's important, and that's playing baseball, right? That's your favorite?
Sure. That's right. When I grow up, I want to be a baseball player, then be into a commentator.
Yeah.
Chip Carey's one of my favorites.
Chip Carey's amazing. Do you know about his dad and his granddad? Do you know anything about them?
I heard that his grandfather was a commentator.
He was, as a matter of fact.
He wanted to be like his grandfather.
Right? Yeah, that's exactly right. His granddad was the famous Harry Carey, and he was a broadcaster for the Chicago Cubs for a long time. And if you watch a Cubs game, they even have a big old picture of him, like a little cartoon picture. He's got these big kind of goofy-looking glasses. But, man, he was really, really good. And then his son was Skip Carey, who used to broadcast for the Braves, and now Chip is. That's super cool, man. I think you're going to be good for that.
He's not afraid to get on the mic.
I know, right?
He's already taken over.
That's exactly right.
Well, isn't Chip's son doing
I think he is.
Stuff? So it's like fourth generation?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive to think about. I remember, and I don't know about you, Josh, but I remember growing up watching TBS and watching the Braves and listening to them on the radio. And what would happen is the TV guys would do the first half of the game on the TV, and then they would go to radio, and then they would flip-flop. And they don't really do that anymore. But, man, those were the golden days of Braves broadcasting. It was so much fun.
Yeah, Skip, just had that voice. I mean, it was like, it just made you feel like you were at the ballpark.
Yeah.
It just made you feel at home.
Absolutely,
you heard his voice.
He was so incredible.
And I always followed Skip, too. If he went to radio or moved to the TV, then I moved to the TV.
Because wherever he was.
And he was just a great guy. And that classic call, too, when they, I guess in 92, when Sid slid and
he's
yelling Braves win over and over again.
Oh, my gosh. It's
just
nothing better.
In our mind. But
So, let's talk about that. You talk about, being big-time Braves fans. Who are your favorite? Mary, we'll start with you. Who's your favorite Braves player right now?
Ozzie Albies.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that dude is so good. And it's so interesting to see because he's not the biggest guy on the field, but he's got
like
just
me,
as
I'm not the biggest guy, and I like to play second base.
There you go.
There you go. Well, you got a smaller strike zone, that means, too. Get a lot of walks, get on base easy. That's what I used to do, just fake it till you make it.
That's right. The thing about Ozzie, he's got a little pop in his bat, too, and he's not the biggest guy. You got some pop in your bat?
I do. Once I was playing on mine and Colby's team.
Is that your brother?
Yes.
Okay.
Brother. It was bases loaded with two outs, and I hit a base-clearing triple.
That a boy. Goodness gracious, awesome. Man. Yeah, that does sound like you got some pop in your bat. So,
and you're a switch hitter like Ozzy.
Hold up, really?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So. How do you figure out that you're a switch hitter? Because I wasn't a good hitter from the right side, and I'm right-handed, so mm-hmm. I definitely wasn't going to be a good hitter from the left
side. It actually started with my older brother. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be a switch hitter, so he taught all my other brothers. And then my youngest brother wants to learn lefty.
Yeah.
So all of us want to be switch.
That's super cool, man. Mm-hmm. And that's such a great trait to have, being able to, as soon as the pitcher rolls out, you know which side. You know, you mm-hmm. can just choose which side you're going to go hit from. Is that something, Josh, did you play baseball growing up?
I did. I played Little League, and then I took the most important time you're supposed to be playing baseball, I took that time off, and yeah. then I went back to playing high school,
uh-huh.
and I realized I was so far behind the curve, and so I was terrified of ground balls at that point, because I had been out of it for
sure.
so long, and so I was terrible at the plate, because all the guys pitching in our schedule, like, they were just wild. Like,
yeah.
you just never knew where the ball was going to go. And
ain't much has changed, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I was a great outfielder, though. I loved running down a fly ball. That was my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, my son's very much that same way, too. Like, he doesn't want to play the infield anymore. He is committed to being a center fielder, and that's exactly what he says. He's like, there's just something about tracking down a ball and being able to get mm-hmm. to it when nobody expects you to be able to
and
do it.
And if I ever did get on base, I was great at stealing bases.
Okay.
But it was just, you know, I didn't get on base a lot.
Yeah, right. I can relate to that feeling. Goodness gracious, man.
Do you ever still get out in the yard with Marion and some of the other kids and throw the ball around a little bit, though?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always – I'm actually always trying to get them away from baseball, because they do it 24-7,
right.
365.
You don't want them to burn out.
Exactly. And the funniest thing, though, is that when my oldest son, Hampton, was like 8 years old, he actually hit me square in the face with a fastball. Broke my nose, gave me my
what?
First concussion.
Oh, no.
Ended up in the ER. It was and it was on mine and Jennifer's anniversary. It was a great
wow.
gift.
So you got away from, yeah. from those wild pitchers in your league, only to be
yeah,
hit in the
exactly.
face by your kid.
Yeah, my son. Yeah, thanks a lot. So with that said, I have like forbade them to use a real baseball in the backyard, because I didn't want that happening to one of his little brothers, because
sure.
I was like, if he can knock me out,
mm-hmm.
you know,
you
tell him what he can do to his little brothers.
Absolutely.
And so they got into playing with wiffle balls, and that turned into these little blitz balls. I don't know if you know what they are.
I totally
yes.
do.
Yes,
man,
it's a big
they,
deal now.
They have competitions with those things, trying to hit it over the fence in the backyard
sure.
and all this kind of stuff. So now that they've gotten older, I'm like, you need to play with a real baseball, but they'd rather play with the blitz ball
right.
in the backyard,
because yeah.
they're so much fun.
No, they are. It's so much fun. You're exactly right.
Now, Marion, I know that you love playing second base, but we were talking before the show. Don't you also do a little pitching? Or
yes, I do a little pitching. My brother Colby, he likes pitching, and my brother Hampton, they're like, pitching is their thing.
Now, who's your favorite pitcher on the Braves? You can say a couple of them if you want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, man.
He looks like he didn't
down.
Want to choose.
Probably Anderson or Freed.
Yeah,
okay, yeah.
Ian Anderson. Yeah, it's funny because he's from Shenandoah High School, which is a little bit tough to say. And around,
not to be confused with Shenandoah.
Exactly right. You're exactly
yeah.
right, but it was so funny. The very the only reason I know that is my wife's from upstate New York, really close to where Ian Anderson's from, and she's the one that told me. She's like, oh, he went to Shenandoah High School. And I was like, hang on. He went where? Yeah, I had no idea. And when his name first started getting bounced around here, I would hear people say Shenandoah, and I was like, guys, you're getting it wrong.
Yeah.
And they argued with me. They argued. I was like, no, listen to me.
Yeah.
I know what I'm talking about.
I'm
on
from
this
around
one.
Here.
Typically,
yeah.
I don't know what I'm talking about, but in this instance, I have it right. They just beat me to death because I was like, I'm telling you, y'all are wrong about it.
You know, Max Fried is a lot like a Braves Hall of Famer and a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. To me, he reminds me of the great Greg Maddux. And have you ever
yeah.
heard of Greg Maddux, Marianne?
Yes, I have.
Okay, cool. I'm just hoping that you go back and watch some Greg Maddux, because
mm-hmm.
he was, I think, possibly the greatest pitcher of all time. I mean, Cy Young is up there, but we didn't
certainly.
See him. Maybe
yeah.
the modern era, anyway.
Yeah, no
mm-hmm.
doubt.
But Max reminds me of him. So if you can
yeah.
learn... They, I think, kind of pitched to contact and
certainly being able to
got
to
it done short in a short, you know, they didn't go long. I mean, they didn't the game. Whenever I would go to a game and Greg Maddux was pitching, I kind of felt like I was going to get gypped, because I knew the game was only going to last about an hour and a half or so.
He was going to set some folks down quick.
Yeah, he's a really great pitcher. So check out Greg Maddux.
Yeah, Freed, his curveball just takes away everybody. You can't swing at it.
Yeah.
You're not going to hit it.
Yeah, locks them up.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. It's so much fun to watch. What about you, Josh? I mean, we talked about Marion's favorite players. Who are some of your favorite players from the past or even currently?
Oh, man. When it comes to pitchers, you know, Craig Kimbrell.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who I've gotten to know a little bit. You know, he was just so dominant when he was here with the Braves. And it was just like you knew when he came in he was going to get you three outs like that.
And no doubt.
You know, and not having him has been somewhat of an adjustment.
Sure
to just watch, you know, the bullpen try to get up to that level. You know, we've got some really good arms in the bullpen this year. But like I say, you know, Kimbrell had his own style. He had his own thing, and he came out there, and I think he had an intimidation factor that the batters, it's like it didn't matter what pitch he was going to throw. It's like, you know, he's staring them down. He's got that arm hanging out.
Oh, yeah.
And all that, but yeah, he was, you know, one of the most dominant.
Yeah, he's so much fun to watch.
I loved how he used to show that gun off, and it was kind of like an old gunslinger, really.
Almost like an old western,
the old west
bit.
Or something. He would just show them that gun, and they would get scared. It needs a buckle on that thing. And I hope he comes back to the Braves for the end of his career. I really
too.
Do. I love the guy.
He told me a story one time about when he was playing in high school that he actually threw a no-hitter, but he was throwing so wild in that game, he gave up four runs.
Wow. So. No-hitter, but four runs.
Yeah.
That's hard to accomplish.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. But that's the funny thing about baseball, right? Is that it has those moments that you can't believe. Well, like, I don't know, I'm sure you guys were watching the other night. It was the night the Braves clinched against Milwaukee when they couldn't review the foul ball play. It's one of those
goodness.
Things where you're like, you know, you want to scream at the TV.
Yeah.
Because you're like, what do you mean you can't review that? You can review pop flies in the outfield, but you can't in the infield. I thought it was the dumbest rule I've ever seen or heard.
It's in play.
It's past home plate.
That's right. Yeah, I was blown away that was an unreviewable call.
We just got lucky that it didn't really affect the Braves and the outcome of the game. If it had, there might have been more revolt on the field.
No doubt about it. I, you know, but one of those things when it was like Chipper with the infield fly and people, you know, throwing trash and stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, that was.
Never
that
do
was,
that,
no, yeah,
no.
Don't ever do it. That was a rough day. We happened to be there, and there was just some things that were being tossed around. And my son at the time, he was probably, I don't know, eight, probably about your age. Marion, and he was like, "What are they saying?" I was like, "Nothing. They're not saying anything." You know, just it was one of those wild days. But yeah, we got by. It didn't matter ultimately. And remember, if you remember, Duvall then had the pop up in the infield pop up that the second baseman and the pitcher just let drop between them. So it almost made up for the horrible call on the field.
And then Rosario came up to hit a 2-run. Single.
That's right, man, and got the game all tied back up. It was a lot of fun, man. So, all right, Marion, so let's talk about the Braves and chances to win the World Series. What do you think about the Braves' chances to win the World Series, either this year or in the next couple of years?
I think they might win one since they got all the trade deadline.
Yeah, the guys that they picked up.
Yeah, and I think Austin Riley is kind of come through in the postseason.
Yeah.
I hope the Giants win.
Is that who you want to play?
We want to play the Giants. We do not want to play the Dodgers.
Okay.
The Dodgers. Right.
They have our number, don't they?
Mm-hmm. It's hard to go to the World Series with the Dodgers.
I know. It's tough. And there's something mentally that the Braves seem to struggle with the Dodgers. It's almost like the University of Georgia with Alabama. They just can't get over that hump for some reason, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you think they can win it this year, or do you think it's going to be a couple years?
It might be this year.
Might be? All right. Well, look, I'm with you. Why do you think they've been so successful? Is it the people that they brought in, or the people that they had to begin with?
Their pitchers.
Yeah, it's just the solid pitching.
Their pitching
staff. Enoa, when he got hurt, came back, got like two or three losses. He hasn't got back into a role. And we got Treadley Morton, and we have Max Fried, Ian Anderson, and we have three studs in our starting rotation.
Do you have a favorite reliever? Because mine's Luke Jackson.
I like Luke Jackson.
Yeah, he's awesome, isn't he? Have you ever noticed that right before he pitches, he kind of takes his hat off and says a little prayer before he jumps up? I always loved that. That was my favorite. I think that's why he's my favorite pitcher in the bullpen.
I like seeing that.
Yeah, me too. And it was so funny because he got bounced around a little bit early when he very first came to the Braves. He got bounced around a little bit, and people were beating him up, and I just couldn't give up on him. And I was like, no, I'm telling you, this guy's a great pitcher. And then so, sure enough, he sure has been for the last couple seasons. So, it's been really good to have him.
Even Will Smith.
Yeah, Will Smith.
37 saves.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
37-38. But it's kind of scary when he comes up and walks somebody. It's like bases loaded, two right. outs, two strikes, and then he finally gets the out.
He never lets you down, but man, yeah. he's going to make you bite your fingernails off. Yeah. We've all
nervous.
Been there.
Makes you nervous.
We've all been there, and he's from Noonan, Georgia, too. So, yeah, he's from right down, you know, south of Atlanta. So it's good to have a hometown boy doing well. Yeah. I love that part.
Marion, what about baseball cards? You guys got a baseball card collection going?
I have two books and a container of baseball cards.
Okay.
I have a complete season. I think I have two complete seasons of baseball cards. I think one was 2018 or 2017.
That's
and
awesome.
Then, yeah, I have a lot of baseball cards.
Do you have a favorite? Do you have like one that's your prized possession baseball card?
Probably my signed Matt Kemp.
Heck yeah, nice. Man. That's really cool. Is that one that you were able to get Matt to sign himself, or is that one you got in a pack?
Signed himself.
Get out of here. Where did that happen?
It happened here. It was at SunTrust.
Oh,
it
yeah.
wasn't Truist yet.
Yeah. Oh, that's super cool. Yeah, and Matt Kemp, he's one of, he came over from the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get away from those guys. Yeah, so did you collect cards growing up too, Josh?
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Yeah, it's a funny story, though. You know, when I was growing up, we didn't have cable television, you know, all that, internet and all that. So, like, the only time we ever got to see baseball on TV was during the postseason and on the three major networks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I vaguely remember, like, 1988 when the Dodgers won with, like, Oral Hershiser,
yeah,
Fernando Valenzuela,
yeah.
all that. Like, I remember my daddy, you know, he liked Tommy Lasorda and all that. And I don't remember 1989, but then in 1990 – the Cincinnati Reds won it.
The Nasty Boys.
It was just an impressionable age, you know, for me. Yeah. And I became this huge Cincinnati Reds fan, and so did my brother. And so we started collecting all the Cincinnati Reds cards and all this stuff. And then as time went on and as I got older, I got to thinking, I was like, why am I not cheering for the Braves? Like, they're my hometown. They're my home team, you know,
here,
so
here.
To speak. And being from South Carolina, and so I was all in with the Braves at that point, you know. But it's funny, you know. I still remember all the players from that 1990 Cincinnati Reds team, and I have all those cards from that year. But it's crazy. After that, I became a Braves fan.
Yeah, sure. Was it Eric Davis?
Eric
was
Davis,
on that team.
Barry Larkin.
Yeah.
Rob Dibble.
Yeah.
Paul O'Neill.
That was a good lineup.
Chris Sabo.
Yeah, Sabo. He had the glasses.
Oh, yeah.
He had those rec spec glasses on.
But my favorite was Glenn Braggs, which he wasn't, you know, a great player, you know, longevity wise, but he was just like this, I mean, just muscle bound guy.
Yeah.
He was the one that, you know, when he swung and missed and the bat comes around, the bat actually broke across his back.
What?
You know, you can find it on YouTube.
I need to go look that up.
But yeah, he was just this big, strong dude. And it was like, he just looked like, you know, a bodybuilder in a baseball uniform. It was crazy.
Did you tell him about the wild card of the Cardinals and the Braves?
Oh, yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
What was it? Hang on. What was it again?
2012.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Phil Fly Rule.
Yes.
He mentioned that.
Yeah, yeah, man. That was. Were you at the game? Or you just watching?
We were watching. We were throwing stuff at the TV.
You got in on the action. Not to be left out.
Were you a Cardinals fan? Or were you a Braves fan?
Well, yeah, the first two Major League Baseball games I ever went to was at the old Busch Stadium in St. Louis. My family had won a vacation to St. Louis back in the day, and we got to go there, and I got to see Ozzie Smith and all that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Stuff.
Willie McGee.
Yeah, and so from that point on, like, the Cardinals were always kind of like my second favorite team. And so I had a Cardinals hat in my possession the night that the Braves were playing the Cardinals in that wild card game. And then after that infield fly rule, I went to my closet, got the Cardinals hat, and threw it in the trash.
Right.
I said, never again.
No,
they're not even my second favorite anymore.
There you
no,
go.
I love
well,
it.
Well, it's good to be just a fan of baseball. And those teams you mentioned are just classic National League teams that play baseball the right way. And we were all fans of theirs in the 80s, especially with Vince Coleman and Willie McGee and just stealing all those bases and everything. But like you said, We live in Braves country, and we pull for these Bravos,
right.
man. So
right.
I guess 91 kind of changed everything for you, too, because we went on that run of 14 straight division championships.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, it was just hard to beat those teams. And, you know, Bobby Cox, I mean, golly, you know, he's just, you know, he's the
greatest manager
of
ever.
Baseball, you know,
yeah.
It's just, and I miss seeing him in the dugout. But, man, yeah. Snicker, I think, has, you know, come in and done a great job. And, you know, just being with the organization for as long as he
40
has,
plus
you
years.
Know, just, I mean, it just shows how this guy's got such a discipline, you know, and a perseverance. And he just, Chip Carey, you know, he's always talking about how, you know, we don't quit with Snit, you know, but there's a reason for that, because Snit never quit himself.
That's
know,
right.
he's just endured all those years, you know, working in the minor leagues and this and that and the other, and he comes up here and he knows the game.
He certainly
knows.
And
I think that's the reason why we're having a lot of success.
Well, I think you're right about that. And he was hired by the late, great Hank Aaron, you know, mm-hmm. as his playing career was coming to a close. Hank was like, this guy's got something, and Hank was right about so many things.
Yeah, but he told him he needed to be a coach, basically, you know. And talking about the legacy of Bobby Cox, you know, both of the leaders of the Braves, Snicker and Freeman, they both came up under Bobby Cox. Their mm-hmm. first couple, you know, he was mm-hmm. a bench coach for Bobby, and then Freeman, in his first couple of years, kind of learned under Bobby Cox. You know, even your favorite reliever, Kimbrell, his first year in the bigs was Bobby Cox's final season. So Bobby's legacy is still here with us.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
He's a terrific guy. Mm-hmm. Switching gears just a little bit. Do you have something else you wanted to mention about Bobby Cox? Or anybody, for that matter?
I kind of wish seeing Bobby Cox go out of the dugout and start talking to the umps.
That's right. Talking is putting it lightly.
That's a very kind way, which you're a kind young man. I wouldn't expect any less. But, he would come out and he would discuss some of the things that had happened on the field that he didn't care for.
What did you like about that, Marion? What was cool about that to you?
I don't know. I just knew. Yeah. I just like seeing
before,
him.
That was before we had instant replay. So, so he would come out and argue the calls.
Yeah, I just like watching the argues.
That's right.
But now we have instant replay and you can't really argue it.
Well, I know, but then they still get it wrong, as we were talking about earlier. Well, that makes me want to throw my hat. You know? It makes me mad. But, you know, it's funny because I love Snit too, because I think he's such a terrific man and he's got an incredible story, and going all the way actually back to his high school baseball team. If you ever get a chance to look it up, there's actually a book written about his high school baseball team. It's fantastic. But the thing is, I do wish Snit would, because he's really even keeled every now and then. I want him to go out there and bow up a little more than he does.
Kind of like when Pablo Lopez on the first pitch hit Acuña.
That is exactly what I'm talking about. That's exactly right. That's right. All right, so we'll switch gears and go to college football really quick. Just being from South Carolina, a big Clemson fan. Your wife, Jennifer, is from Stone Mountain, big Dogs fan. Mm-hmm. How about them Dogs? I got to tell you, I side with Jennifer on this one.
This episode of Braves Country is sponsored by our Braves fan friends down at Century 21, Solomon Properties in Savannah, Georgia, servicing the historic downtown Savannah area, the island area, and Atlanta's beach, beautiful Tybee Island, Georgia. Call Joel Solomon today. 912-604-0896. That's 912-604-0896 for all your real estate needs on the Georgia coast.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.
Just being from South Carolina, a big Clemson fan. Your wife, Jennifer, is from Stone Mountain, big Dogs fan.
Mm-hmm.
How about them Dogs? I got to tell you, I side with Jennifer on this one. But you got to sing the national anthem at the Georgia-Clemson game. What was that like? I mean, because, obviously, a little bit of a house divided going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that was only the third time we've been to a Georgia-Clemson game, you know, since we've been married. And really, I guess, in our lifetime since they've played, because they quit playing each other for a long time.
Sure did. Yeah.
And so for it to be the opening game of the season, to be there in Charlotte and all that, it was just it was an incredible night. We had great weather. It was 74,000 plus fans on hand. And it's funny because I've gone into anthem retirement a couple of times already because I kept thinking, like, there's no way that – performance or that event's going to beat,
or be
beaten. And so I was asking a buddy of mine who works for Clemson, about getting six tickets and maybe having bus parking because I thought I was going to have to go to a show like the next night and all this stuff. And so he comes to one of my shows back in July this year and says, he said, I'm still working on your tickets and your parking and all that. He said, but would you be willing if I threw your hat or name in the hat for the anthem? And I just kind of dropped my head. I was like, yeah, sure, go ahead. You know, I couldn't say no because like I've been asking for all this stuff. And so lo and behold, they choose me to do the anthem. And I was like, well, here we go again. Right. Coming out of retirement. Yeah. And but the most disappointing thing to me, and I'll just be completely honest with this, is that ABC didn't air it. And it wasn't because of me. Mm-hmm. It was because when we got out there, the paratroopers coming down, you know, parachuting onto the field with the game mm-hmm. ball, this whole crowd was singing along with me word for word with the anthem. It was, you know, they were showing the troops and the first responders on the Jumbotron, and it was like this huge moment of unity that we so need nowadays.
Yes, sir.
But they didn't air it. And it was like, that's the stuff that we need, but... You know, it was just disappointing to me.
Yeah, for sure.
And obviously, I don't make those decisions, but, you know, I just went out there and did my best for the 74,000 plus on hand. And, you know, a lot of people talked about it on social media, and they took a lot of pictures and videos and all that, and kind of word of mouth kind of thing. But yeah, it was like those are the moments that we need, you know, on air for our country to see that, you know, we're actually more united than you think.
I think so.
The media doesn't want to show that because they don't want to let people know that we're united. They kind of
used to prioritize
that kind of thing. That used to be something they would feature, and I think you're right. They should have aired that. Let's start a campaign right now. ABC, if you're listening, go ahead and re-air that.
Let's re-air it.
Give us the footage and we'll air it. Come on.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Whatever it takes. No doubt about it. But then also, big college basketball fan. But a Duke fan? I'm trying to, I mean, it's like a round hole in a square peg.
you can thank my daddy for that one because, like I say, we grew up Clemson fans. Mm-hmm. My daddy was always a huge basketball fan. But Clemson was never any good at basketball. And so when Coach K came in, what was it, 1980, to Duke, he loved the way Coach K ran things and the way he coached. And so from as far back as I can remember, in my household, we cheered for Clemson football and Duke basketball. It was just always that way. I grew up with early memories of Danny Ferry and Christian Leitner and Grant Hill and, you know, all of that. And then I ended up making some connections at Duke and got to go to Cameron Indoor several times for games. And when I finally got to take my daddy to a Duke basketball game in Cameron Indoor, that was one of the highlights of my life, was being able to take my daddy there after he brought me up such a great basketball program and all that. And so it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's terrific. No, I love it. And being a Georgia fan, we've not had much luck outside of Dominique Wilkins.
The last game we were at was, I think it was me and my daddy and my oldest son, Hampton. We were sitting literally right behind the Duke bench. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'd have reached my hand out, I could have touched Zion Williamson's shoulder.
Jeez, that's a big kid, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's like made that little folding chair look like a miniature chair. It was crazy.
Like it was long.
But, man, seeing that guy play in person was just terrific. Unbelievable.
Marion, big basketball fan, too?
A little bit.
Sounds like a baseball fan answer.
Yeah, that's a baseball fan answer for sure.
He's being diplomatic. He's all baseball, I can tell you.
I love it. But football, do you like to watch football at least?
I do like college football.
Yeah, it's fun, right?
And I really like the Panthers. And Georgia and Clemson got to play at the Panthers.
That's right.
Team, so
that was cool to be there.
After that, I got to get a hat.
What? Get out of here. Which hat did you get?
It was a Panthers hat. It had like a shield on it or something. It said Carolina Panthers.
Nice. All right. So you're a lifelong Panthers fan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, who are you a fan of? Like in Pro Bowl, do you keep up at all?
Well, growing up in South Carolina, we didn't have a team.
Yeah.
And then when I moved to Nashville, wife and I became big Titans fans.
Okay.
And that didn't last very long. I won't get into that. But but yeah, we watch every so often.
Yeah.
So.
You know what? To be honest, I don't watch a lot of the NFL either. I hadn't watched them several
years. They don't
air
the national anthem. And when they do, they mess it up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
But I tell you what football is good for. It's good to keep you sane during the wintertime when you're waiting for baseball season.
That's right.
That's about all I use it for, except for Georgia Bulldogs.
Except for college football. That's a different story altogether. Yeah. But you know, you grew up in the South, as did we. So what is it? What does being a Southerner mean to you? Because it means a whole lot to me.
It defines a lot of who I am. You know, I'm a Christian first.
Me too.
And then second, you know, I'm a Southerner and, you know, an American Southerner. So I'm big into the history of the South, and I think, you know, we're talking about, you know, mainstream knowledge, you know, like a lot of people, you know, get things wrong. You know, was the South perfect in a lot of ways? No, absolutely not, but the North wasn't either.
Right.
And even after the Civil War, when we became a more cohesive union, you know, we've still gotten things wrong.
And continue to.
And because this country's full of imperfect people. It's like,
right.
You know, it's like people going, trying to find the right church for themselves. It's mm-hmm. like, well, the church is full of imperfect people. That's why they go there.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you can't expect human beings to do things exactly right all the time. But I think there's so much beauty in the American South, in that culture, whether it's the music, the food, the people, the accents, the, you know, just the clothes,
right.
the everything, you know, it's like, and so if you listen to my records, you'll hear that Southern influence throughout everything that I've done. And so, you know, even my last country album was called Deep South, you know, and it was literally a song that I wrote by myself where I kind of went back in time and just kind of, you know, wrote a song about what it was like for me growing up in the South. And
yeah.
it was just as simple as that. And it's something I love, and it's something that I've tried to bestow upon my children, you know, to kind of teach them where they came from. I'm big into ancestry. I want them to know, you know, the genealogy of not just my family, but, you know, Jennifer's family. And
sure.
and so it's just certain things that have just been passed down from generation to generation. And it's like, who was it? Ronald Reagan said, you know, it only takes three generations for an idea to be lost.
That's
you know?
Right.
So I just try to continue to pass down, you know, certain things to my children. And
so important.
All that. So.
Yeah, no, it's so important.
What are some of the what are some of your favorite Southern cities or even small towns where you just love to go or that you love to tour through? Tell us like your top three Southern locations that you just love.
Man, that's a good question. I love where I'm from. Obviously, I'm from like the PD region of South Carolina. You know, so a lot of those, you know, a lot of that area, you know, is just that's where I grew up. So it's kind of hard not to pick that. But then beyond that, you know, I've been touring now professionally for 20 years, and one of my favorite places to be is in the Appalachian Mountain area, where whether it's East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, Western Virginia, you know, even West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, you know, that whole area. And I think the reason I like that area is because, first of all, that's where the first recorded country music ever took place.
That's right.
Was in Bristol, which mm-hmm. that's like actually where we're going to be tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
The music that my daddy's parents, you know, introduced me to was a lot of that rootsy, earthy, bluegrass, Americana
sure.
country, Southern gospel kind of stuff. It reminds, that area of the country reminds me of that music that I grew up on. And so when I go there, there's like this unspoken connection between me and the fans that a lot of people don't realize. It's like I get out there, they know that I know who they are, and I know that, you know, I know who they are. And so it's just, I don't know, they appreciate what I do. I appreciate their loyalty and their love for me. And then I guess beyond that, you know, I love Amelia Island, Florida for some reason.
Oh, my gosh, it's beautiful. It's great.
My family, you know, we went on vacation there years ago, and I've started taking my family there.
That's
now.
That's what you say. Marion jumped in. He was like, dude, count me in. I'm
yeah.
a Amelia Island guy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and that's where it's big for Georgia fans specifically.
Yeah.
So your mom will probably know this, that that's where all the Georgia fans kind of stay when mm-hmm. they're going to play Florida. Go down
yeah.
there and beat up on those Gators.
And
I think Bobby Cox
Tidy
has
Island.
A place
yeah,
down there.
He does, yeah. as a matter of fact, yeah. And I'll tell you a place that I love, and you guys have probably been there, but Fripp Island, South Carolina, is one of my
mm-hmm.
favorite places on earth, the Lowcountry.
Yep.
Just so beautiful. Like, if I could retire and go somewhere, if that's probably where I'm going to be. It's funny. I was stationed aboard USS South Carolina when I was in the Navy, so we'd spend a lot of time in Charleston, and the people over in Columbia were super kind to us, so I have a little bit of a soft spot for that area as well. But, man, I'm telling you, Fripp Island, if you've never been, it is the most gorgeous place. There's just something special about
yeah.
Fripp in that low country.
And the Georgia coast mm-hmm. just across. I like South Carolina coast, too, but I'm partial to Tybee Island.
No, I love Tybee, yeah,
I think
sure.
I just want to go hop from all these islands and maybe get a little boat on one of them.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah, one day in the future, huh?
Yeah, we got to have dreams, right?
I'm telling
sure.
you, no doubt about it.
But talking more about music and faith and baseball all in one question here. This year, Garrett Whitlock, who's a relief pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, and he's from Atlanta, he's been using your classic song, Long Black Train as his walk-in music this season.
Love it.
And it helps him stay grounded in his faith, he says. What does that mean to you, Josh? And both having him do that and having written a song like that that touches people's soul.
So I found out about this from my attorney, of all people. So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, it's a pitcher for the Red Sox. His walk-up music is Long Black Train. And I'm thinking, like, when he comes to the plate. And I'm like, he's American League, so he probably, you know, he's probably had, what, 10 at-bats all season, you know, if that. And so I'm thinking, what's the big deal? But I was flattered. I was like, great, you know, he chose one of my songs. That's awesome. Well, unbeknownst to me, he uses it every time he comes up on the mound. And I was like, okay, that's a whole different story here. And so literally about a week ago, I'm watching one of the Red Sox playoff games, and, you know, they're coming out of commercial. You can hear the commentators talking, but in the background, I hear something familiar. I'm like, what in the world? Because they didn't show who was on the mound or anything. Sure. They just showed, like, this wide shot of Fenway Park, you know, sold-out crowd. And I'm like, that's my song. And so they zoom in. They show Garrett Whitlock on the mound. I'm like, that's him. That's the deal. Like, you know, and so I was you know, just kind of blown away by that. And you could see him on the mound, like he's singing along to
That's
it.
Awesome.
And all this stuff. I was like, this guy, you know, he's really a fan. And so one of my managers sent me an article that was written about him where he's telling the story behind, like, why he chose that song and how it kind of helped him through some tough time in his life and just kind of humbled him. And, you know, I guess he had Tommy John or whatever, and he was trying to get through that and all that. He seems to have a pretty good head on his shoulders. And so, I was just very honored and very flattered he would choose one of my songs. I don't know if anybody has ever chosen one of my songs for their walk-up music.
Well, yeah, most guys have, like, Metallica blaring or something that's kind of, like, loud or to kind of psych up the other team or maybe to get themselves fired up. But he's got a something going on where he's more into prayer and bringing it, kind of coming in solemn in a solemn way, which I think
it.
Is fantastic.
No, it's super cool because I think that song has, I mean, you would know better than anybody, that song has had such an impression on so many different people. And, you know, I remember when it was, I still have, because it was nominated for some CMAs and all that sort of stuff, right? Yeah, because I remember that was the first ever CMA Awards I ever covered for a radio station in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I think I still even have some of the press stuff that they, you know, when the record labels send out things to vote for a particular song. I think I still have some of that stuff at home.
Yeah.
Because it was such an impressionable song. It's so good.
Well, it's an instant classic.
No
doubt
about it.
I mean, that's one of those songs where you're just like, that had to have been around forever. But really, though, I was amazed to see that you just wrote it or that it came out in 2003.
Yeah,
and that's just like you know, amazing that you kind of dug into your soul to offer that and to share that with everybody. And I wanted to ask you, I know Johnny Cash passed away in 2003, and did he ever get a chance to hear that song? Because it kind of has a Johnny Cash vibe to it, if you ask me.
Yeah, I was working alongside a guy, an engineer, at the time when Johnny Cash was doing all those records with Rick Rubin, you know, and all that, and so when I found out that this engineer friend of mine was working alongside Johnny Cash on all that stuff, I had the idea because I don't even know if I had recorded it yet at the time, but I was very protective of my songs because I was like, everything that I write is for me. I'm not here to pitch it to other artists or whatever. But with Johnny Cash, it was like, you know, that's a different story. You know, he's not going to be going to radio with that or whatever. And so I asked this engineer friend of mine, I was like, would you be willing to, like, play this for Johnny and just to see what
his reaction
what he thinks, you know, see if he would record this. And he's like, I'll see what I can do. And so next time I see him, he comes back. I was like, hey, did you get a chance to play that for Johnny? And he said, yeah. He said he told me that he wasn't recording any more train songs.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, man, okay. Well, fast forward down the road a few years, he dies, and then they find out that the last song that he wrote was a song called Like the 309, and it was about a train, and he had recorded it. And so I was like, well, I guess he's only recording train songs that he wrote.
You know, exactly.
Well,
right.
Maybe you re-inspired him to
maybe
get back into the train song business.
I'll go with that.
I like it. No, that's a great one. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's terrific, man. I'm telling you. And I know gospel music is close to your heart, and as it is mine, because I was born and raised on country and gospel and Southern gospel mainly, you know, with my mom and daddy. And they, you know, they had that that musical impression on my heart. So, and I try to pass that, much like you're talking about passing music to your sons. I do the same thing with my son, man. We go back and listen to Waylon and Willie, and then we back and listen to, you know, because he's only 17, so we go back and listen to Your Man and some of the stuff in Long Black Train, and then we'll go back and listen to the Nitty Gritty Dirt Bands, Fishing in the Dark. Mm-hmm. But then we go back and listen to the hymns, too, because those are so important to me. You've got a new Christmas album, and we'll talk about that in just a second, but you've been doing Christian collaborations and Jubilee music and then this Christmas record, so what was it that made you decide to do a Christmas record? What was it that said, you know what, it's time, because I've never done this before?
Well, when I moved to Nashville, my number one priority was to establish myself as a country artist, you know, to make the records, to get my name out there, to build my fan base, to have hits, to sell records, you know, to just establish myself like every other artist. And so for the last, like I say, I've been doing this for 20 years now almost, and one of the most common questions I get, especially around the holiday time, is, Josh, when are you going to do a Christmas record?
Right.
And it was always on my list of things to do, but it just never felt like the right time. And so it was kind of sad, because every time Christmas would roll around every year, it's like, oh man, I don't have anything to offer. You know, it's like all these other artists, friends of mine, they got, you know, Christmas music out there, but and I don't. But this year it just felt right. The label was on board with it. I had developed a rapport with my current producer, Kenny Greenberg, and I was confident that, you know, he and I could make a great Christmas record. And so we first sat down to talk about this thing back in January this year. And then, like, in April and May, it literally took me 22 days to do my part of the record, which is the quickest I've ever made a record in that respect. And so, you know, it was a fun record to make, but I think the reason it didn't take that long is because I'd had these ideas just built up from over the years. And so when I presented Kenny with all these ideas and song choices and all that, there was plenty to choose from. Like, we had plenty of stuff left over. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very different record. You know, when people buy this, it's probably not going to be what they expect, because and that was intentional, because I've always been adamant about the fact that there's so many Christmas songs out there. We've heard them all. You know, everybody's got their own version of it, and a lot of them sound the same. And that was one thing I wanted to try to avoid. And I knew it was a tall task, but I felt like I could do it, because I was like, okay, I'm going to try to get some originals on here that nobody's ever heard. And beyond that, these classics, I need to think outside the box and do these things in a way that nobody's ever conceived before. And so most every song on here that I didn't write was arranged by me, and it was just you know, like I say, it's a very interesting record. I've always said that, like, you don't have to have a horn section or a string section or jingle bells or whatever, you know, all these jazzy chords to make a song a Christmas song. Like, for me, for this record especially, I wanted the lyrics to shine through and say Christmas, and I think we accomplished that, and I'm very proud of it.
You know, I love a good Christmas record, and when I was a kid, I used to just love getting out my Christmas records around the 1st of December and start to rock them on the turntable. And I've listened to your record, Josh, a few times, and I think you did it. I think it's just a great Josh Turner record in the context of Christmas, basically. And it's really, I think, another instant classic. And I wanted to tell you that I think it's going to wind up being right in between Gene Autry Christmas and Bing Crosby Christmas. Dang. As far as being a classic.
Dang, all right.
I think you hit the nail on the head, man.
Yeah, every song on this record is different. You know, there's so much variety on this record. I mean, you've got a song like What He's Given Me, which is a straight-up bluegrass song. You've got Mele Kaliki Maka Mai Ohana, which is
a
Hawaiian Christmas song. You've got, you know, stuff like Joy to the World, where we're doing it as a shuffle with twin fiddles, and you've got Rhonda Vincent singing on it.
Oh, my gosh, she's so great.
And then you've got Angels We Have Heard on High, where we got rid of all the orchestral chords. We just made it three chords. We made it almost in the style of the Mavericks. I didn't want it to go completely in that Latin direction, but I wanted it to have that energy and that rhythm. And,
sure.
And so, you know, that's kind of the direction I went with that one. And then, I mean, golly, you know, you got First Noel, which Kenny had mentioned that, you know, my arrangement had somewhat of an Irish feel. And I was like, I wonder if there's a way we can really kind of tap into that. And I was like, do you know anybody that plays penny whistle? And so we got Jeff Taylor from the Time Jumpers, and he came in and played that and had all these little cool, you know, little organ instruments and stuff. And so I just wanted it, each and every song, to kind of have its own identity,
right?
You know, and have its own message and be able to, you know, express that.
No, I love that. And before we get to the Christmas tour, Marion, you got to sing on this record?
Yes, sir.
Holy smokes. What was that like? Were you nervous at all?
Not really.
No? All right. So when your dad says, hey, I think we're going to get you and your brothers and your mom and everybody in here to sing on this, you're like, count me in? Or you're like, yeah, hang on a minute. Hang on.
Yeah, I was like, count me in. I could do it because I've been in front of a lot of microphones.
Yeah.
Like you said, I've done plays. I've done
music
on Daddy's records and stuff. So I was really on it.
I know baseball's your favorite, but do you pick up any instruments? Are you interested in that?
I play guitar, mandolin, I'm learning piano, drums, and I play ukulele.
Wow. That's pretty incredible, man. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, that's one of the things that I told my son that I wanted him to do, and of course he didn't listen to me. He didn't play anything. You know, I was like, mm-hmm. I was like, do you know, all you have to do is play a piano, and you'll have the prettiest girls in the entire room. They'll be over there ready to talk to you because you can tickle the ivories a little bit. I'm telling you, that's a little later down the road for you, but I'm telling you, this is going to be such a feather in your cap. You're going to be thanking your dad one day, I promise you.
This is the third time he's been on one of my records.
Really?
The first time was on my Punching Bag record. I had a song called Find Me a Baby. And there was this little section where, you know, we do all these na-na things, you know, and so Jennifer and the boys, and Marion was just a baby at the time. So if you listen to that song, there's like the little baby voice in there. Yeah. That's Marion.
Oh, that's so cool, man.
That was his
man.
Record debut.
That's right, man. You made a debut really, really early. It took your dad, man, like, you know, 25, 30 years, and you're right there immediately. It's pretty
impressive.
I don't
even think he was 2 years old then, because that was 2012. So.
Yeah.
So he was almost two, maybe.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, congratulations, man. That's awesome. I'm glad you're doing that stuff, man. I love the fact that you're not shying away, because you said plays and you said music, and then you love baseball too. And it just shows that you're really well-rounded, and I think that'll be it's gonna be greatly beneficial in your life, buddy, I promise you. You're doing the first ever Christmas tour, and you're hosting the Christmas at Belmont. It's a PBS special taping for a national broadcast on the 20th, and then they're going to re-air it on Christmas night, 9:30. There's about 650 Belmont University student musicians are going to be joining you for a show. My wife, Laura, she's a Christmas fanatic. She loves all the decorations. She'll start listening to Christmas music probably the day before Thanksgiving. So, you know, that's how much she loves it. So this is the kind of stuff that she can't wait to watch.
Yeah.
So doing that had to be incredible.
This will be the second time that I've done Christmas at Belmont, but Belmont's changed and grown so much since the first time I've done it. I don't even think it was on TV back then. If it was, it was just locally in Nashville, but this time it's going to be nationwide. And yeah, you know, I'm a graduate of Belmont. So is Jennifer. That's where we met. So we have a lot of history there with that school. And so I'm honored that they asked me to do this again. And so it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's one of the schools that's on my son's college list. Like he would like to go play baseball at Belmont. And he, much like Mary and me, wants to be a broadcaster, right? So at the end, the Mike Curb School of, was it Music and Entertainment?
Yeah.
I may not have the exact title right, but Mike Curb's, you know, been bestowed with that school there at Belmont. It's just really cool to have a resource like that in country music and in Nashville, because there's so many country artists that go to Belmont, right?
Yeah, there's been quite a few. But like I say, you know, when Dr. Fisher was there, he just expanded that school, you know, just facilities, parking garages, you know, the big, you know, Curb Event Center and all that. And they even have like a brand new like film and TV department.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. So
yeah,
it's blown up.
Yeah.
Josh, does it feel sort of full circle to you to come back to your to Belmont and perform for a national TV audience?
Yeah, makes me feel old. but yeah, it's fun. Like I say, going back there now, it's the way it looks, you know, it's just so different from when I was there. I like to joke that I paid for a lot of that.
You know? That's right.
But
like $40,000 a year.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. You probably did.
So yeah, it's a little weird going back there because, it, like I say, it looks different. But yeah, it's always fun to be asked to come back.
And we were talking about Johnny Cash earlier, and I heard that when you were a student at Belmont University that you just waltzed up to Johnny Cash's door and knocked on it like you knew him. Tell us how that went, man. Is that true?
Yeah. I was reading his autobiography and had read about his Shy-Dreger syndrome that he had been diagnosed with at the time, which we found out later he was misdiagnosed. He did have a neurological disorder, and so I'm just sitting there thinking, like, golly, you know, I don't know how many more years Johnny Cash is going to have on this earth, and if he dies and I don't get to meet him, I'm going to be extremely disappointed because I had learned so much from him. He was such a huge influence on me, and so I somehow or another found his address, and being the fanboy that I was at the time, I loaded up my guitar and all of his records and all of this stuff, you know, just in case he, you know, just felt like signing a bunch of stuff, yeah, right. You know. And so I drive all the way up to Hendersonville, Tennessee, and this was before GPS and all that. So I'm following these directions. I'm trying to find the place, and I get lost a couple of times. Well, by the time I found the house, it was dark, and I'm like, oh, man, this is not the way I wanted this to go. But when I get there, there's a fence around the property. There's a gate. Gate's open. I was like, well, you know, I'll just drive on in. So I drove on in. There's a couple of SUVs, you know, in the driveway, and I pull up and park in my old 89 Toyota four-wheel drive pickup truck.
There you go.
With a four-cylinder, you know, and I get out, and I go to the first door I see, and there's this stained glass window to the side of the door, and I could vaguely see a painting of June on the wall, and I was like, okay, this is the place. And so I knock, no answer. Knock again, no answer. I'm like, man, what in the world? So I go around the corner of the house, and it's like I couldn't even see my hand in front of my face. It was so dark. I was like, oh, I'm not going to go around there.
Yeah.
And so I went back to the door, and I banged on the door. And I hear this voice coming from the depths of the house saying, coming, coming. And my heart just started fluttering.
Oh, I'm
like,
sure.
I was like, that can't be who I think it is. And so I see the door swing open wide, and there stands Johnny Cash.
Wow.
He's got reading glasses on, a denim shirt, a gold necklace with a cross on the end of it. He's wearing bedroom shoes, hair all a mess. And it, when he sees me, he kind of flinched. And I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back on it, I realized that he was expecting somebody, but he wasn't expecting me.
Not you.
And I sure as heck wasn't expecting Johnny Cash to answer the door. I thought, you know, somebody else would and kind of run interference. But I stood there, and I shook his hand and introduced myself. I told him I was a student at Belmont. I told him I was from South Carolina, and I was looking to get a record deal one day. And I was telling him all about, you know, how he had influenced me, and you know, I commended him on all of his work that he had done with Billy Graham and,
sure,
you know, all this stuff, and just was just blah, 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 blah. And then finally I had to stop and just kind of catch my breath, and I told him, I said, I'm sorry. I was like, my heart's about to beat out of my chest. I'm so nervous. And he kind of laughed at me, and he said, oh, you know, we're all human.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I told him that I knew about his Shy-Dreger syndrome, and I'd been praying for him and all this stuff. And he thanked me, and he shook my hand again. He said, I'm going to go back inside and rest. And I said, okay. And so we shook hands. He shut the door. I go to walk back to my truck, and I just broke down and just started bawling.
Wow. Like, wow.
Yeah. Just crying my eyes out because I could not believe that that had just happened.
Yeah, right. And that's one of those.
All
lives.
The way back to my apartment there on campus, I'm just like, did that really happen? Like, it was so surreal. It's like, I just met Johnny Cash. And like I say, I was respectful. I didn't ask for a picture or autograph or anything.
Sure.
But ever since the first time I told that story, you know, it's just like word of mouth. It's like, here I am 20-something years later, and I'm still talking about
it. It's so part amazing. Of the legends of, it's like a new country music legend
now. No doubt about it. As we wrap up, we always ask folks about the food they eat on the road, because ain't nothing better than good barbecue and some mom and pop joints. What's your favorite thing to eat in favorite restaurants when you're traveling through the South?
Actually, I love the Rudy's chain out in Texas. It's a little barbecue. It's kind of like a gas station / barbecue joint. I love that. There's a restaurant in right outside of Las Cruces, New Mexico, called La Posta, and man, they got some of the most incredible, like, New Mexican food. You know, the hatch green chilies and all that, pozole and all that kind of stuff. I also love Mi Tierra's in San Antonio. You know, it's just been around forever. It's open 24/7. You know, we always love going there. And so, yeah, it's just like there's a lot of good eating places across the country. It's good.
What about Christmas time food? Marion, you got any you excited about anything that's going to be at the house for Christmas time? What do you have for what do you eat around Christmas time?
A little bit of everything.
Whatever we feed you.
Yeah. What's your favorite food? We'll make it more simple. Pizza?
Hot dogs or burgers?
Okay.
He's a ball player through and through.
That's exactly right.
You know, I got a feeling one day we're all going to be working for Marion Turner.
Exactly right. Man, we want to tell you thanks so much for joining us here on Braves Country. You and Marion both. Welcome back anytime here at the Braves Radio Network and here at the ballpark. Just appreciate your time and wish you nothing but the best. And God bless you both.
So I got one more funny story for you before we leave.
Yeah.
You were talking about the Garrett Whitlock thing and the walk-up music and all that. So I'm friends with Charlie Culberson.
Yeah,
and
he was just here
and he's
doing the broadcast.
With the Rangers now.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's been about a week ago or so now, but I jokingly texted him and said, "Hey, man," I said, "have you ever considered using a Christmas song as your walk-up music?" And because I was like, you know, my record comes out tomorrow or whatever. And he's like, "Dude," and I was like, "I don't know if anybody in MLB history has ever done
that." It was a Christmas song.
I said, "But that would be kind of cool." And I was totally joking. Like, I was not serious. And so he texted me back. He said, "Which song would you want me to use?"
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I'm like, I was totally joking. I'm not serious. And he was like, "But I am serious." He's like, "Which one would you want me to use?"
Amazing.
And, but unfortunately, there was only like two games left in the season.
Right.
And I don't think he ended up in the lineup on those two games. So
right.
But he was like dead serious.
He was going
to change his walk-up music to one of my Christmas songs. And I was like, that would have been hilarious.
That would have been the greatest. The whole time.
King Size Manger by Josh Turner. First Christmas music ever used for walk-up in MLB history.
So funny. Man, and Charlie's such a great guy. He's the nicest guy. And we've become acquainted with him a little bit over the years. Certainly not to that level. But we were pulling in, and he was going to do the Braves pre and post broadcast. And my son jumps. He was like, "I'm parking in the deck." And he was like, "There's Charlie. We're going to go say hi."
Yeah.
I was like, "All right." And I like literally had to stop. And I didn't even get the car stopped good. And he was out the door and ran up and shook his hand and, you know, just said hi. And it was just – but he has that – he's just a great man.
Yeah.
Gosh, he's
great
the greatest. Ever. And, man, there's a lot of Braves over the years that have been. But I know you guys got to get up because you got a big old show tonight, Marion. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you being here, man, and best of luck. I think you got some big things ahead. I feel certain about it.
Thank you.
You bet you, man, Josh.
Yeah, Marion, thanks for bringing your dad on the show.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
We hope you guys have a Merry Christmas, too.
That's right.
Y'all, too.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
God bless y'all.
The Braves Country Podcast supports the Warrior Alliance and the Shepherd's Men. Check out thewarrioralliance.com and shepherdsmen.com for more info, resources, and how to get involved. That's thewarrioralliance.com and theshepherdsmen.com. The Braves Country Podcast would like to thank all of our veterans.
This episode of Braves Country is sponsored by our Braves fan friends down at Century 21, Solomon Properties in Savannah, Georgia, servicing the historic downtown Savannah area, the island area, and Atlanta's beach, beautiful Tybee Island, Georgia. Call Joel Solomon today, 912-604-0896. That's 912-604-0896 for all your real estate needs on the Georgia coast.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.